We were most of the way to the trailer when I saw what Adam had done.
Wow!
A rocket bursting out of the window wouldn't have done more damage. The window and its frame were toast, and a little of the outside skin had been bent up. At least all the glass was on the outside.
Be careful you don't step on the shrapnel.
I took the long way around the trailer to keep him away from it. My tennis shoes might be wet, but they were proof against a few shards of glass. In the trailer, I stripped out of my wet clothes and put them in the sack with the bloody clothes from earlier. I was going to need some more clothes. Adam started to shift back to human, so I grabbed clean underwear and a t-shirt and gave him some room. After I dressed, I found a towel big enough to cover the broken window frame and taped it up using some of the first aid tape from the kits because I couldn't find any duct tape. I keep a couple of rolls of duct tape in all of my cars. The first aid tape wasn't the wussy kind, though. This was the stuff that needed WD-40 to get off skin once it was taped down. I hoped the repair people would be able to get it off without damaging the trailer further. I noticed where a spot of blood had dropped on the carpet. It could have come from any number of things in the past 48 hours. I kept this up, we might just be buying a trailer soon.
You could have died.
So could you have when Hank shot you.
I tried not to sound defensive when he hadn't yelled at me, yet. Adam wasn't the only one who had to learn not to get mad about something that hadn't happened. He wasn't completely human yet. He knelt on the carpeted floor on the far side of the trailer, his head bowed as he waited for the last of the change. Even when he was finished, he stayed there, his back to me.
I cannot. When I heard you scream, I thought I'd be too late.
You came. You came, and I am fine.
When you were shot, I would have killed the man who took your life and not cared. Not even knowing it was not his fault would have made me feel bad about it. And when I knew you'd be okay, I wanted to yell at you for not moving faster, for not being invincible.
What in hell were you doing in that river?
He still wasn't looking at me.
Trying to get out of it as fast as I could.
I could feel his emotion, a huge tangle I couldn't decipher, except to sense the atavistic power of it.
Adam, I can't promise not to get into trouble. I managed it for most of my life, but these last couple of years have more than made up for it. Trouble seems to follow me around, waiting to club me with a tire iron. But I'm not stupid.
He nodded.
Okay. Okay. I can deal with not stupid.
But he still didn't turn around.
Or I hope so. I was not tracking straight through most of this. That was Coyote? The Coyote?
That's what he said, and I'm inclined to believe him. It also appears that he is, or some aspect of him, was my father. It was complicated. I understood it, mostly, but I had to think a little sideways to do it.
I bet.
Adam was trying to come down from the wolf's anger. I tried to find something to say that didn't hurt me and wouldn't make him mad.
I guess Coyote playing at being human is why I am a walker, even though Mom's not Indian.
Your father's not dead. Your mom is going to be...
Yeah. My father wasn't dead, and he was. Had I really even had a father? Better to think about my mother.
As much as I have this pressing urge to get back at Mom for orchestrating our wedding without consulting me, I can't do that to her.
I looked down at my bare feet. They'd been inside the wet shoes long enough to gain that wrinkled look and corpse-like color.
She really loved Joe Old Coyote, and Kurt is wonderful, but Joe... He rescued her. He treasured her.
I thought of Coyote's voice as he talked about my mother.
I'm not sure that Kurt could compete with the man she remembers. Maybe even Joe couldn't. And Joe is dead. Really dead. He wasn't really Coyote, just a suit Coyote wore for a while. Real to himself and everyone around him, but in the end, he was a construct. And Coyote... Mom would figure it out eventually. But by the time she did, Kurt might not be waiting around.
Adam stood up then and came over to me. He put both arms around me. He didn't say anything, just held me.
My life used to be normal. I got up, went to work, fixed a few cars, paid a few bills, and no one tried to kill me. My father was dead. My mother was 6 hours away by car. I could even manage to make that trip last 8 or 9 hours if I worked at it.
Argued with your back fence neighbor.
And watched him when he wasn't looking. Because every once in a while, especially after a full moon hunt, he'd forget that I could see in the dark, and he'd run around naked in the backyard.
I never forgot you could see in the dark.
That's pretty good. Not quite up to my slowly eroding rabbit, but you get points for that.
Adam was a neat and tidy person, the kind of man who walks into a room and straightens the paintings. For years, I used the junker car in my backyard to exact revenge for high-handed orders I had to follow. Had to follow because they weren't just high-handed, they were smart. When I was particularly annoyed, I'd remove tires, never all four, and leave the trunk open or one of the doors, just to bother him. He evidently had run around naked to bother me.
Thank you for the years of entertainment.
No trouble. Now that we're married, are you finally going to do something with that car, like tow it away or store it somewhere out of sight?
I took a deep breath, and my lungs seemed to be working just fine, with the awful my father who wasn't my father lump in my stomach gone.
Don't think about it. Maybe you should put it on your what I want for Christmas list.
You okay now?
Okay. He tightened his arms and lifted me off of my feet, moving his mouth close to my ear.
Mercy.
I wrapped my legs around his waist.
Yeah, me too.
Adam could have died last night. I could have died 20 minutes ago. I wasn't willing to waste a moment more. At some point in the night, Adam kissed my paw print tattoo.
Did you really tell Coyote this was a wolf print?
To you, it is a coyote print. For him, it is a wolf print. Only I and my tattoo artist know for sure.
I woke in the morning to the sound of Adam's stomach growling under my ear.
Sorry, too many changes and not enough food.
I patted his hard belly and kissed it.
Poor thing. Doesn't Adam treat you right? No worries, I'll go feed you.
Let's go find some place to eat breakfast and get some groceries. And some clothes for you.
Even when he was distracted, he still listened to me. While I was dressing, I noticed the number written on the palm of my hand and remembered I was supposed to make a phone call.
Yes?
Hi, Jim. Coyote told me to call you. He said that you wouldn't believe that he was real unless I did.
The man on the other side of the phone didn't even breathe. Adam grinned at me as he buttoned up his shirt.
How is your husband?
He's fine.
Even the red mark was gone. How fast a wound healed varied from wolf to wolf and wound to wound. As Alpha, Adam tended to heal even faster than most. I'd expected that to change since we were so far from the pack, but evidently it hadn't.
How are Hank's head and Benny's foot?
Hank is okay. Once we got him away from you, he seemed to recover a bit. Though he has a concussion, it's not a bad one. Fred told the doctor Hank took a fall. The doctor seemed to think it might involve a pipe or tire iron, but Hank told him it was a fall too. Fred is keeping an eye on him. Benny has been tranquilized ever since he tried to get up and leave, the second time. He seems perfectly happy.
So we're meeting at Stonehenge? Coyote seemed pretty sure something could be done for Hank.
You were very casual about meeting Coyote. Maybe we both just had a dream.
You're the medicine man. You should know better than that. And be casual, too.
Maybe that wasn't fair.
Eventually, anyway. I'm married to a werewolf and I've met Baba Yaga. At least Coyote doesn't fly around in a giant mortar.
Baba Yaga? No, I don't want to know. Maybe I should go back to teaching school about crazy people instead of being one. Yes, I'll see you and your husband at Stonehenge at midnight. The memorial is supposed to be closed after dark, but I have a few contacts. Indian sacred ceremonies usually works, but I have a few more tricks up my sleeve if I need them.
Adam didn't approve of Walmart.
There is a department store back in the Dalles.
Do they still call them department stores? Doesn't matter. Walmart is the happy shopping grounds for the financially challenged and those who ruin clothing on a daily basis. I don't care about ripping up $5 t-shirts and destroying $20 jeans hurts less than $80 jeans.
I took a moment to really look at him. The bright lights over our heads flickered and gave his skin a slightly green cast. That was the fault of the cheap bulbs, but the tension in his neck and the hunted expression were different. Too many strangers, too many smells, way too many sounds. A paranoid person, or an alpha wolf, might feel like he couldn't make sure no one blindsided him in a place like Walmart.
Hey,
I brought us to a stop.
How about I shop here and you head over to the grocery store and grab some food? I'll shop in peace and you can pick me up in 45 minutes.
He shook his head.
I'm not leaving you here alone.
The only thing that wants to kill me is in the river.
The woman pushing a cart past us gave me an odd look. I've been shopping at Walmarts for most of my life, and I've never been assaulted in one. I narrowed my gaze at him, though I kept it focused on his chin. As long as it's not demons, fae, or sea monsters, I can also take care of myself pretty well. I'm not helpless. And suddenly, it mattered very much that he not treat me like some ninny who needed to be protected at all times. Someone who would stand around waiting to be rescued. He saw it in my face.
Okay. Okay.
I stood on my tiptoes and kissed his cheek. Thank you. He kissed me back. Not on the cheek. By the time I'd recovered enough to process information, he was striding out the door, and everyone in view was staring at me. I flushed.
We just got married.
Saying that made me feel stupider, so I hurried to escape in the aisles. The Walmart in Hood River wasn't as big as any of the three in the Tri-Cities, but it had jeans and shirts, and that was all I was worried about. I grabbed four dark-colored t-shirts and three pairs of jeans in the proper size and headed for the dressing room. I didn't need to try on the t-shirts, but I never buy jeans without putting them on first. It doesn't matter what size they say they are. Some of them are shaped differently than others.
Hi, I have 7 items.
The lady working the dressing rooms gave me a bored look, handed me a plastic 6 and a 1, and then sent me in. Apparently, they were out of 7s. The only other occupants of the rooms was a harried mother and her teenage daughter arguing about how tight the girl's jeans were. They stood in the larger area in the center of 2 rows of small rooms in front of the big mirror.
They're fine, Mom.
You'll sit down and the seat will split, just like happened to your Aunt Sherry when we were in high school. She has never gotten over it.
Aunt Sherry is a... Well, anyway, I am not Aunt Sherry. These are mostly Lycra, Mom. They're supposed to fit tight. Look.
I squeezed past the girl who was doing deep knee bends. I found an empty room, then tuned the mom and daughter out. I don't know about normal folks, but if I wanted to, I could have listened in on the conversations of everyone in the store. I'd had to learn early to ignore them, or I'd have gone crazy. Adam paid attention to all that noise because he worried about safety, but I wasn't worried enough to put up with the discomfort. The first pair of jeans had a puzzling bulge halfway down my thigh on the left leg. I tried turning around to see if it was just my imagination, but the left leg bulge stayed where it was. The teenager and her mother had left the changing rooms when I went out to look in the bigger mirror, so I had the whole thing to myself. Unless I'd mysteriously gained a lump on the side of my thigh, there was a problem with these jeans. I went back into my room and pulled them off. Then I checked in the smaller mirror to make sure that I hadn't suddenly mutated. To my relief, without the jeans, my thighs looked like a matched pair. The river mark was still curled around my calf. I'd have to remember to ask Coyote if he could get rid of that one too. The second fit better, no odd bulges, and my butt didn't look bigger than it ought to in them, but it had fake pockets on the front. I use my pockets. No pocket jeans are only slightly less irritating than thong underwear. The third pair didn't fit as well as the second one had, but they had pockets that worked. I could live with them. If they bothered me too much, I'd just wear them to work until they were ripped and greasy enough I didn't feel bad throwing them away. I had 15 minutes to pay and get out to the parking lot. I hung up the rejects and pulled my own pants on. I buttoned them just as someone dropped onto my shoulders, knocking me to my knees. I caught a glimpse of a blade in the mirror and grabbed the hand that held it, even as I fell. I jerked my head back hard and pulled the hand forward at the same time. I connected with some body part that was also hard, a chin, I thought, though I couldn't be sure. Her chin, because it was a woman's body that had hit me. I slammed her wrist on the wooden bench along the back wall, and the brass bladed knife fell out of her hand. I dropped my hold on her, grabbed the knife, and tossed it back up through the hole in the ceiling she'd come from. I didn't want to be caught with a knife in Walmart. I was the wife of the Alpha of the Columbia Basin Pack. Knife fighting was not an acceptable activity. If she tried to crawl back up there and get it, I'd use the time to run out to the main store, where cameras could catch me defending myself against an armed foe.
You leave her be. Finders keepers. She belongs to us.
The River Devil? But I had no chance to ask her. She ignored the knife and threw herself at me. I let her momentum pull me to my feet and carry us into the larger area between the changing rooms. The big mirror showed me her face. It was the odd woman who'd been staring at Adam and me the day before yesterday at the restaurant. I'd been right. She had been Fae. More specifically, water-type Fae. Because she smelled of it. Dollars to donuts, she was one of the Otterkin. She fought like an otter too, coming in close, inner circle, fast and furious, trying for my throat with fingernails and teeth. Fortunately for me, we were not in the water, and she was not an otter, but a fey, though she smelled like both. Glamour had never made sense to me. It is a kind of magic the fey use to change their appearance. According to Z, the ability to use glamour is what makes a fey instead of some other kind of thing that uses magic. Glamour is an illusion, but not. Because with glamour, a 25-pound otter is a 140-pound woman. Tactics that work really well for an otter don't work as well for a human, not even a human with a knife, particularly since I have a brown belt in karate. I was not helpless. The thought that Adam would never again let me out without a keeper, if I got hurt, made me determined to win this fight. In the couple of minutes we engaged, I ended up with a bunch of bruises, including what was going to be an awesome shiner from where she ran me into a doorknob, a split lip, and a bloody nose. On the other hand, I broke her nose, and while she grabbed it, I got a really good kick into her ribs. If she didn't have a broken rib out of it, she had one or two cracked ones, which should slow her down some.
What's going on here?
I turned to find the flushed face of the formerly bored changing room lady. The fey turned into an otter and ran up the wall into the ceiling and was gone. As the fey woman's scent faded from here to was here, I turned to the clerk. Her mouth was opened unattractively as she stared up at the ceiling.
You don't get paid enough to deal with this.
I didn't borrow authority from Adam for fear that it would worry him, but I know how it sounds and can imitate it when I have to.
She's gone and won't be back.
I looked around, and except for a dent in the drywall where her knee had hit the wall, there wasn't any extra damage. There was blood all over, but I was betting that Walmart had cleaners to get all sorts of things off their floors. I grabbed the jeans I wanted as well as the t-shirts. I put the darkest t-shirt up to wipe my nose. It hadn't been a hard hit, and it had mostly stopped bleeding.
I'll just go pay for this. You can put those other jeans back where they go, then call someone in to clean up.
I walked away from the changing room like I knew what I was doing. I paid for the clothes with cash, so there was no awkward name left behind at the scene of the crime thing. The clerk was too occupied looking at my split lip to notice that one of the shirts was bloodied. As I took the receipt, I noticed a general migration toward the changing room on the part of the employees. At least one of them looked old enough to be a person of authority. I smiled at the clerk and tried to look innocent, grab my bags, and make a quick getaway.
Honey.
I hastily turned back to the cashier.
You get rid of that man. You don't have to put up with being a punching bag.
It was a woman, and you are absolutely right.
I walked briskly out of the store and kept going across the parking lot as I called Adam.
I saw a sandwich shop in the little mall above Walmart. I'll meet you there.
It's a little early for lunch.
We'd eaten breakfast just before he dropped me off at Walmart.
You're a wolf. You can eat any time.
What did you do?
I hoped that wasn't someone coming looking for me. I made my brisk walk a little brisker.
Got in a fight with my girlfriend, apparently.
I hung up before he could ask me anything else. The nice lady at the sandwich shop had been happy to fill a plastic bag with ice and accepted my story about a jealous girlfriend with a sympathetic ear. I kept my wedding ring hidden. She made me two large chicken sandwiches, and I paid for them and a pair of juices. When Adam drove up, I was watching the police cars at Walmart. It must have been a slow day. With the ice bag wrapped in my new blood-stained black t-shirt, bloodstains on a new black shirt were more a matter of texture and smell than color.
I think we ought to go back to the camp.
He pulled the ice down from my eye and took a good look before he let me put it back up again. Then he examined my hands and brought my free hand up to his lips so he could kiss the bruises. He led me to the truck and buckled me in. It was a good thing that there weren't too many cars in the parking lot, or he'd have never gotten the big truck back out of it. I never had that problem with my rabbit. He didn't say anything, just drove the quarter of a mile toward the highway on-ramp in silence. I made it mostly to the Dalles before I broke.
I didn't know anyone wanted to kill me when I made you leave me alone.
I smelled Faye.
The sneak. That was why he'd kissed my knuckles.
She jumped me in the changing room.
I'd known after the doorknob hit my eye that I wasn't going to be able to hide the fight from Adam. Not that I'd really been planning on keeping the attack secret. It had just been an option I'd wanted to keep open if I could.
I think it was one of the Otterkin, and she was the weird lady from lunch the day before yesterday.
Did you leave the body?
No body. I wasn't trying to kill her. And once I got rid of the knife, I was pretty sure she couldn't kill me. She wasn't any stronger than a normal human. I don't think so, anyway. As soon as the clerk came in, she glamored back to Otterkin and left through the ceiling. She might have used magic to get up there, but otters are pretty agile.
Adam squeezed his nose.
I guess you proved your point. You can take care of yourself.
I wonder why the Otterkin are trying to kill me.
I don't think that we'll call in the Fae to help us against the River Devil. I think the chances are that they may come down on the wrong side.
You were thinking of asking the Fae for help.
Help was even worse than a favor. He gave me an exasperated look.
I said I wasn't.
It sounded like you might have been before I was attacked.
You're trying to distract me. You don't need to. I'm not going to yell at you because you were attacked, especially since you won the fight.
She ran away.
Without accomplishing her purpose. That's losing in my book. Especially since you got rid of her knife before she stuck it in you.
I gave him a wary look, but he honestly didn't appear upset.
Mercy, in a fair fight between near equals, I'll back you every time. It's the demons, vampires, and river devils I worry about. And I'm working on that.
I could live with that if he could. Unlike the Maryhill Museum or She Who Watches, Stonehenge was a place I had been to many times over the years. It's right on the way to my mom's house in Portland. Sam Hill had been told that the henge at Salisbury had been used for human sacrifice and decided that it was a fitting memorial for the men who were sacrificed in World War I. Adam and I parked the truck next to a deserted orchard down by the river and walked over hill and dale to the high place where Sam Hill's conceit looked out over the gorge. I never could decide if Stonehenge was beautiful, spiritual, or merely a roadside oddity. Certainly it was impressive. A massive, exact-sized replica cast in concrete of a place half a world away. The original Stonehenge took about 1,600 years to build. The one at Maryhill took a little more than 10 years to complete. It is a monument to commemorate 13 young men of Klickitat County who died in a war nearly 100 years ago. A silent testament of a man who knew how to dream big. And, I'd been told, a magical collection site of great power to those who knew how to access it. I'd always taken that last bit with a grain of salt. After all, I'd have thought a powerful place would have attracted witches or something nastier, and there is not a whole lot nastier than a black witch. And in all the years I've been visiting, I'd never seen anything dangerous. The other reason I'd doubted was because I'm pretty good at sensing magic, and it had never felt any more magical than my garage. In the night, it was different. The minute my foot landed on the flattened area around the monument, I could feel the pulse of magic under my feet. Adam sensed it too, though werewolves don't usually feel magic, other than their own. He lifted his head.
I thought this was an awfully public place to meet. You can see up here from all the way over the river on the main highway. But now, Coyote's desire to meet here makes better sense. I've heard talk of ley lines since before I could walk. Bran might be a werewolf, but he understands the working of magic, even if he doesn't do witchcraft or wizardry himself. I don't think he does, anyway. I've been here a lot over the years, and this is the first time I've ever felt magic.
Ley lines? I can feel something.
He closed his eyes. He was trying to pick up that little bit more that isolating his senses might give him.
Ley lines, huh? Feels like someone's stroking my hair in the wrong direction.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No flirting. We're here on business.
My husband, the eternal tactician, had determined that would be the better course. I like those two words together. My and husband.
What are you grinning about?
I told him, and he grinned too.
Hopeless. You are hopeless. We're supposed to be getting the lay of the land, not making goo-goo eyes at each other. I suppose it won't do much harm, though, since it has already been scouted.
He tucked his arm around me and nodded toward the tall stone outer ring of Stonehenge, where a pair of hawks perched, watching us.
Ah, but are they enemy scouts or friendly ones?
Friendly.
Jim Alvin came out of the shadows.
Hank found that as a hawk he can better resist the River Devil, so we thought it would be safer for everyone if he stayed in his feathered form.
It takes a lot to sneak up on a coyote. Upwind, silent, and cloaked by darkness and stillness. From Adam's expressionless face, I knew he hadn't sensed Jim either. I reached up and tipped an imaginary hat to him.
Are all medicine men as adept at sneaking around as you are?
And one of those coincidences that happen only once in a while. Calvin came tromping down the gravel driveway, making as much noise as any human possibly could.
Uncle Jim? Are you around here somewhere? I parked the car where you told me.
He stumbled over an uneven spot in the road.
And why can't we use flashlights again? Because we want to break our necks?
I'm not sure he intended anyone else to hear that last bit.
Not all of us.
Where are you?
He couldn't see us, though we were no more than 40 feet away, and the half-gone moon lit the night.
I tried to imagine what it would be like to wander around the night half blind to everything around you. Vulnerable. No wonder people look for monsters in the dark.
We're over here.
Calvin changed his trajectory. About half the way over, he saw us. I could see it in his body. Evidently, his uncle could too.
The Helpmans are already here. Hank and Fred are waiting in the monument.
Calvin increased his pace.
Everyone is early. Do we have to wait until midnight?
We'll see. The earth is rich tonight, waiting for us.
Nature abhors a vacuum. Why aren't there nasty things out here sucking up this magic?
Because it's ours.
Shamanistic. Not accessible to witch, wizard, or fae? I've heard about this kind of place, but never with any detail. I assumed they'd be hidden places.
Not accessible to other kinds of magic users without a lot of work, and more time than they are allowed. This is a pretty public place. My grandfather cleaned out a coven, burned the whole town to do it, and Maryhill never recovered. But they haven't tried again. I'm not sure that the Fae can't access it, but if they do, they probably can find a place nearby that is more private and almost as powerful. Ley lines are lines. They don't just stop in one place. From what I've heard, a wizard wouldn't hurt anything. But I've not seen one here.
The power was here before Stonehenge, but the construct seems to make it more accessible. There are a couple of places near here that were more traditional places of power, and probably were better before Sam Hill built this here.
Did Coyote tell you what he wanted you to do with all this magic?
Coyote? Who is Coyote?
Coyote.
Calvin smiled uncertainly, blinked a couple of times, then seemed to get it.
Coyote?
Then he looked at me.
She knows Coyote. Damn! Oh, hot damn.
Watch your mouth, boy.
Freaking shit! That's why you are a walker when your mother is white. Coyote is your freaking father!
I don't know why his reaction offended me. No, I have it on the best of authority that Coyote is not my father. My father was a Blackfeet bull rider who died in a car wreck before I was born. I wasn't completely sure that Coyote wasn't my father, but I knew that he didn't think so, and I wasn't claiming him if he wasn't claiming me. Calvin frowned at me.
I am not Coyote's daughter.
Glad that's cleared up. Yes, Coyote told me what he wanted me to do. It's all set up inside the circle.
Let's go see it then.
Adam took Calvin by the arm.
Follow me. I'll keep you on your feet.
We walked past the Healstone, a 16-foot-tall monolith just a little northeast of the rest of the monument and under the continuous ring of cement-formed stone that was the outer edge of the henge. I looked up warily when we walked underneath the cement slab where both hawks were perched. They were about 15 feet over our heads, and my inner coyote was sure that wasn't far enough away. We were loud, too. The fine, textured gravel wasn't conducive to quietness.
Hawks hunt by day.
Adam's grip on Calvin had shifted upward until he just rested a hand on his shoulder. But he was talking to me.
As long as Hank doesn't have a gun, wolf trumps hawk at night.
Adam smiled, an expression that was as full of challenge as the hawk's cry.
Anytime, hawk. Anytime.
He was still ticked off about being shot. Come to think of it, I wasn't too happy about that either.
Calvin and I came about an hour ago and set up what we needed with flashlights. Coyote was pretty firm about no visible modern technology for the ceremony.
He looked at Calvin, and I was sure he could see in the dark a lot better than his nephew.
Flashlights were mentioned particularly, but I'm an old man and a big believer in work smarter, not harder. So we came up with a truck.
Stonehenge consisted of the Healstone, a pair of concentric circles, the first the ring of lintel stones, held up by standing stones, the second a ring of monoliths, maybe 8 or 9 feet tall, and an inner court. The inner court was shaped somewhat like a horseshoe, with the open end pointed northeast, at the Healstone, in fact. The outer rim of the horseshoe was delineated by 5 huge sets of stones, each made of 2 standing stones holding up a lintel stone. They always reminded me of those staples used in furniture building with a small band and tall legs. There were 2 on each side of the horseshoe and 1 in the center. All of them are taller than the outer ring, and the center one was taller still. Inside these massive rock sculptures was another set of the monoliths, following the horseshoe pattern. On top of all the monoliths, both in the inner court and the outer, were fat, clear glass containers that protected the fat, white, unlit candles inside of them. The candle wicks were mostly blackened, indicating that they'd been used before. In front of the tallest of the massive cement pretending to be rock staple-like things, there was an altar, 8 or 10 feet long by 3 feet wide and 2 feet high. A few feet in front of the altar, the wood for a small fire had been set on top of what looked like a circle of 2-inch-thick coarse gravel, much darker and coarser than the gravel already there. I bent down to touch it.
Tomorrow morning, when we can see, we'll come clean up. The gravel will make it easy to erase any sign of fire. We don't want to give anyone ideas and have a bunch of teenagers lighting fires up here at night. It will also make sure that the fire doesn't spread. Grass fires happen this time of year, but I don't want to be the one who's responsible for one.
Adam had climbed up on a monolith to take a closer look at the candles, a casual pull-up that hinted at the strength he kept in check. He dropped to the ground and dusted his hands.
Hard to light from down here.
We kept the stool I used to put them all up there.
Calvin had stayed near Adam, but kept taking surreptitious glances at me. Then he frowned.
Mercy? Is that a black eye?
I reached up to touch it.
She got into a fight in Walmart.
Someone who didn't know him probably wouldn't hear the amusement in his voice.
What?
She was attacked in Walmart.
You should see the other woman. I noticed we were missing someone. Where's Jim? He'd been talking to me just a minute ago. I'd have thought that the noisy gravel would keep him from sneaking around. Apparently, I'd been wrong.
He's gone to wash and change. There's a little building over there, used to be a tourist shop, but it's been closed for a few years now. Jim has a key. I'd better start lighting the candles. It takes a while.
We can help.
Adam took a cigarette lighter out of his pocket. Adam didn't smoke, but he took being prepared to a whole new level.
I only have one stool.
No, it's okay.
Adam moved behind me, grabbed my hips, and lifted me up over his head and onto his shoulders. It would have gone a lot smoother if he'd warned me first. As it was, I had to scramble a bit for balance. He waited until I was steady, then patted me on the hip.
I don't need a step stool.
Adam walked over to one of the monoliths and handed up a lighter.
I have a Mercy.
Even with the three of us working on it, lighting the candles took a long time. I'd never noticed how many of them there were before. More than 30, maybe even 50 of them. When we were through, there was a Christmassy air provided by dozens of white candles. By happenstance or design, we met Calvin at the last standing stone, right next to the altar. Adam set me on the ground, while Calvin finished the last light. In the short time, the magic in the ground had grown, and it jumped at me like an eager flame when my feet hit the gravel. I staggered a bit, and Adam, probably thinking I was still off balance, put a hand on my shoulder to steady me. Calvin climbed off his step stool, put his lighter in his pocket, and folded up the stool.
I'm gonna take this over to the parking lot. Meanwhile, Uncle Jim asked me to tell you that you need to take the shape of your beasts.
Do you know what Coyote has us doing?
Calvin dropped his eyes.
No.
Don't bother. You are without a doubt the worst liar I have ever met. Good for you. But you might keep it in mind and compensate for it. Cultivate a mysterious air and don't answer the things that might tempt you to lie.
That was what Bran did. Even Bran couldn't lie to a werewolf. I didn't think he could anyway.
How long do we have? Walkers may be able to flash between shapes, but I take more time.
I didn't know. Sorry. I should have told you before I started on the lights.
If they want us here, they'll wait for us.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that this ceremony needs both of you.
He took a step away from us, then stopped.
Hey, Fred told me you were asking about deaths on the Columbia. He asked me to check into it, so I asked a friend of mine who's a cop on the river. He told me that in the past 3 weeks, there have been 26 people who are presumed drowned between the John Day Dam and the one at the Dalles, not including the family of four that was reported missing late this afternoon when their car was found at a state park on the Oregon side of the Columbia. That's more people than we've lost on the river in the last 5 years combined.
What family?
A stockbroker and his elementary teacher wife and their two young children.
Lee and Janice Morrison. The dream had been real. I could have done something about it. Surely I could have done something.
That's right. Did you see today's paper?
Adam's hand was on my shoulder.
How long had they been missing?
2 days.
Before my dream. I'd seen something that had happened in the past. No chance of doing anything. It should have made me feel better, but it didn't.
I think it is safe to say that this is something that needs to be hunted down and killed.
Calvin nodded.
Word is that there is an FBI team working on the idea that we have some sort of serial killer on the loose. They're being quiet so far. They don't want to encourage the killer or panic anyone. My buddy was pretty interested in why I was asking. I told him it was because of Benny and Faith.
He looked at me.
That way, I wasn't lying to him.
Let's go change. I didn't want to think about Janice and her family anymore. They were gone, and there was nothing I could do for them. Had we been home with the wolf pack around, we'd just have stripped and changed, but I wasn't comfortable stripping in front of strangers anymore. Even if I'd been willing to, Adam would not change in public. Bran had requested the wolves refrain from changing where others could see. The werewolves were beautiful, but the change is horrific.
No sense in scaring people with what they were, Bran said. Not when the wolves were still trying to be tame for the news cameras.
So we left Stonehenge and climbed over the drop-off just beyond, which hid us effectively from Calvin, Hank, and Fred, as long as the hawks stayed on the far side of the henge. Still, we were exposed. There were no trees nearby, and we could see all the way down to the river and beyond to the highway, miles and miles. Darkness ensured that no one down there could actually see us, but it felt like they could. Beside Adam, who was doing the same thing, I took off my clothes, folding them tightly to discourage any bugs attracted by the leftover warmth. I stuffed my socks in my shoes.
I'll stay human until you've shifted,
so I could guard his back or run interference if I had to. Shifting to Coyote wasn't without its cost. I could do it several times a day, but eventually I wore out. I could also stay human for a long time, months if I had to. Wolves are different. Werewolves are moon-called. They have to change during the full moon, and it is harder for them to control the wolf during that time too. However, a lot of werewolves only shift during the full moon, 2 or 3 days a month. The shift is painful and takes a lot of energy. Shifting more than a couple of times a week was beyond a lot of wolves' abilities. Adam had been changing much more than that lately. His shift was a lot slower than usual, and it looked as though it was a lot more painful too. I sat beside him on the pad my folded-up clothes made. Maybe I should have left my clothes on, but since tonight, at least, I wasn't wet, it wasn't cold. I stayed close to him, but not so close I'd touch him inadvertently and hurt him. The pulse of Stonehenge's magic was growing more regular. I thought it was getting even stronger, too, but that might have been because I was sitting on the ground. My own heart sped up a little until it kept beat with the magic. It wasn't unpleasant, just disconcerting.
Mercy?
Not yet.
How long?
As long as it takes.
The flow of magic paused, as if it had heard him, then took up its beat again. I didn't like it. Are you all right? He didn't say anything, which I took as answer enough. His breathing shallow until I started to be seriously worried for him.
It's the Earth's magic.
Coyote sat down beside me, on the side opposite Adam's struggle. Adam's growl was hoarse and pained, but was nonetheless a threat. Coyote turned to him.
No harm to you or yours. I stand guard for you. They were supposed to tell you to change before you came here. Suppose the instructions got garbled in the translation from Jim to Calvin. Mother Earth does not change easily. That is an aspect of water or flame. Earth magic is interfering with this change, but it shouldn't make it impossible.
I buttoned my lips, because even I knew that intent and will played a part in any kind of magic. No sense putting doubts into Adam's head until he really failed to shift.
What are we doing tonight?
I needed to give myself something else to think about.
Probably wasting our time.
He didn't look at me, but stared out over the world spread beneath our feet. I noticed that he seldom spoke directly to me. Half the time it felt as though he addressed the open air instead.
And if we aren't wasting our time?
I tried not to listen to Adam's struggles, because he wouldn't want me to hear him. I could feel the claustrophobic panic that he was repressing. He couldn't afford for me to panic too.
Come on, Coyote. It isn't a secret, because even Calvin knows.
Point to you. Fine. Fine. I'm hoping you'll call a little help. We aren't what we once were, and some of us never were much for interfering with people. A raven is curious. An otter should feel he has something at stake.
Coyote glanced at me.
Nice black eye, Mercy. Upon reflection, Otter might be on the wrong side. That would be unfortunate.
You're calling the others like you?
There are no others like me. None as handsome or strong. None as clever or skilled. None with so many stories told about them. Who was it brought fire down so people could roast their food and keep warm in the winter? But I'm hoping to call the others, yes.
Other what, exactly? Just what kind of creature are you? The Fae, some of them, had set themselves over the early residents of Europe as deities. The coyote stories never had that feel to them. Coyote was a power, but not one who asked to be worshipped.
Have you read Plato?
Have you? The idea of Coyote reading the Republic or Apology was absurd, and somehow totally believable because of its very absurdity.
You are familiar with his theories of forms.
That our world isn't real, but a reflection of reality. And in the real world, there are archetypes of things that exist in our world, which is how we can look at a chair we've never seen before and say, hey, look, it's a chair. Because in the real world, there is an object that is the epitome of chairness. I used my history degree about twice a year, whether I needed to or not.
Close enough. I am the reality of all coyotes. The archetype. The epitome.
He smiled out into the darkness.
You are just a reflection of me.
They should have called you Narcissus. Poor Adam. Too bad you aren't the enemy we need to defeat. We could just put out a mirror for you to admire yourself in.
And they wouldn't call you Mercy anymore. Your name would be She Who Traps Coyote.
Coyote reached over and took my hand.
It won't be much longer. But I'd wait until he invites you to look before you gaze into his eyes.
Are your sisters really berries in your stomach?
Ha! You need to find someone to teach you the rude versions of my stories. They are much more entertaining. Modesty prevents me from telling stories about myself. My sisters aren't speaking to me right now, so it does not matter what they are.
Beside me, Adam rose with a snarl. I lowered my head to show that I was no threat. After a bad change, it would be a few minutes before Adam had a leash on his wolf. To my surprise, Coyote bowed his head as well.
I like this man, your husband. He would have attacked me for putting you in danger, even though the wolf knew exactly what I was. And yet, when you asked him to have patience, he did. It is proper that men listen to the counsel of women.
Like you listen to your sisters? Adam put his snout just under my ear. I tilted my head to give him my throat. Sharp teeth brushed against my skin, and I shivered.
Wise women, but sometimes pushy and easy to rile. I think they need to develop their sense of fun. They do not agree with me, so maybe they're not so wise as all that, eh?
Adam shook himself hard. I turned to look at him. He jerked his nose up toward the monument. I changed into my coyote self, which did seem to take a little more effort than it normally did, and followed Adam up the hill, Coyote striding beside us. At least he wasn't Baba Yaga or Yo-Yo Girl. Gordon was talking quietly with Calvin and Jim when we walked into the Henge's circles. Jim was barefoot, dressed in new dark jeans and a long-sleeved shirt that looked to be blue in the light of the candles, though my coyote eyes are not always trustworthy with color at night. Gordon's boots, for instance, looked black, but I thought they were probably the same red boots he'd worn the rest of the times we'd seen him. He wore a flannel shirt over a plain t-shirt.
I was beginning to think that it was time to leave.
Earth magic isn't the best thing for a change when you're a werewolf, which is why I told Jim to make sure he was a wolf when he got here.
You said to tell Mercy to bring the wolf.
I was beginning to think that everyone sounded like that after a while of dealing with Coyote. Calvin's eyes widened, and he looked as though he expected Jim to get hit by lightning.
Mercy, you go sit up on the altar, would you?
He looked up at the hawks.
You too. Go sit next to her.
Gordon didn't seem awed or surprised by Coyote either.
Whatever you do in front of Hank, the river devil will see.
Let her watch. But if nothing else happens tonight, I think I can get Hank fixed. Hawk owes me a few favors.
I hopped up onto the altar next to the hawks a little hesitantly. There was a bronze plaque on top, but it was too worn to read in the dark. Adam hopped up beside me and curled around me protectively, keeping the bulk of his body between me and the other predators.
Adam, not being Aztec, we're not going to sacrifice your bride on the altar. She just can't be touching the ground when Jim performs the dance. However, should Wolf answer this call, it would be disastrous if your head were higher than his. Usually he shows up in human or human-like form, but he is one who often prefers his wolf skin. Would you mind taking a position just in front of the altar, between it and the fire?
Adam snarled soundlessly at the hawks, a clear warning, and slipped off the altar to sit where Coyote had asked him to. Gordon's eyebrows had risen, almost to his white hair.
The polite Coyote.
He is family.
I thought you were not her father. That makes him not your son by marriage.
Say, then. I respect him and don't fancy getting in the middle of a dogfight tonight if I can help it. Now, let us get this done.
He changed. His shift seemed even faster than mine, though I couldn't be sure. Between one blink and the next, there was a huge coyote the size of a Saint Bernard. He stalked over to the monolith that was on one end of the horseshoe and hopped up on top of it. Gordon looked sour. Then he became the largest eagle I have ever seen in my life, and I've seen some huge golden eagles. As a bird, he stood taller than the man he'd been. I couldn't say what color his feathers were, though they looked as if they were several shades darker than the hawk's. Then he spread his wings, and I realized Gordon wasn't an eagle after all. No eagle ever had a wingspan that large.
Thunderbird. Grandfather said you were Thunderbird, but that was when he was calling me by my father's name more often than not.
Thunderbird. The bird leaned forward and rubbed that wicked, sharp-looking beak against the side of Calvin's head. Since Calvin's head stayed on his shoulders, I had to assume it was a gesture of affection. With a movement that was half hop and half flight, he landed on the monolith opposite Coyote. He made the standing stone look a lot smaller. Gordon, who was Thunderbird, nudged the candle until it was situated where he wanted. The candlelight turned his feathers a warm, dark chocolate. He rocked back and forth a bit, stretching his wings out, then settled into stillness. Calvin brought out a rolled-up rug, a small drum, and a beaded parflesh bag. Parflesh, untanned hide, was more commonly used by the Plains Indians than the Plateau Indians like the Yakima. However, I supposed a medicine man could use whatever implements he wanted to. Calvin set the bag to one side of the prepared but as yet unlit fire. Then, with great formality, he unrolled the carpet, aligning it with the altar stone. He took the drum with him to sit next to Adam. Jim stood in front of the carpet and closed his eyes. It looked like a prayer, but whatever he did caused the magic to sit up and take notice. I could feel it even through the cement I perched upon. He stepped onto the carpet and held a hand over the stacked wood.
Wood who swallowed the flame of the fire beings, it is time to burn.
When the little fire burst into flame, Adam flinched a bit, but it didn't seem to surprise Calvin or Jim. Jim gave a small nod to Calvin. At first, he played with a simple beat. Then, he caught the beat of the magic that ran beneath us. When he added his own accents, the magic flowed. The wind chose that moment to pick up and throw smoke from the fire into my eyes. I blinked, but I must have gotten some ash in with the smoke. Putting my muzzle down on top of the stone, I scrubbed at my face with my paws. It helped. I lifted my head as soon as I could see. And I was alone.